if humans are going to continue to destroy the planet, then we should just let polar bears eat them. Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, what is climate justice? Welcome and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Tymie. I tried to go slow, moderate my flat eyes from my hillbilly accent.
Oh,
we're going to talk about climate justice today, aren't we? Tymie.
Yes. Yes. So let's start off with a question. Ben, did you see the video of the starving polar bear in 2017?
I don't think I actually watched it. I do know what you're talking about. I've seen the photos and I've seen the pictures, but I didn't watch the video.
Okay, well, it was a video posted to Instagram in December 2017 by biologist Paul Nicklin, who is a co-founder of the Canadian nonprofit Sea Legacy. The caption was, "This is what starvation looks like." So this video was posted in December 2017 by biologist Paul Nicklin, who was a co-founder of the Canadian nonprofit Sea Legacy, with the caption, "This is what starvation looks like." So National Geographic, or Nat Geo for short, picked it up and changed the caption to, "This is what climate change looks like." Mm-hmm. It went viral, breaking a record on the Nat Geo website with 2.5 million views. Mm. Poor polar bear, right?
Yeah, that is sad. Anything starving is sad.
But yes. Well,
especially those Coca-Cola drinking fiendish polar bears.
No one is going to get that. It's so old. No one's going to get that.
No,
joke.
They still play that commercial every Christmas. The polar bears drinking Coke. Yeah.
Okay. Because I don't.
Or I mean, they update it every year, but yeah.
I do not see commercials since I stream everything.
Oh, yeah,
so
true.
The backlash from the public to this video was immense, especially from animal lovers who were angry that they didn't do anything to help the bear. This guy says he couldn't have done anything, but that turned out to actually not be true. Apparently, he could have called the nearest conservation officer who would have euthanized the bear and arranged a necropsy, which is like, you know what that is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. To determine the cause of the bear's poor condition, because it was likely due to one of the cancers known to cause muscle wasting in polar bears. But this would have been a problem because that would have hamstrung his plan to use the starving bear video to spur action on climate change.
Curses. Foiled again.
So he and his film crew simply let the bear swim away without telling anyone, extending the animal's suffering. Mm. So they were using this animal suffering to push a political agenda on climate change, but this did not help the cause.
Yeah.
Climate change was clearly not the cause of this particular bear's plight. Sea ice loss had not been exceptionally high that year, and no other bears in the area were starving. Mm. So it turned out that the incident was even worse than originally reported when some previously undisclosed facts were revealed online by a Sea Legacy partner, Christina Mittermeier. She admitted that they were scouting for an image that could be used to communicate the urgency of climate change when they saw the emaciated bear. He knew the bear was probably sick or injured before they started to film. He didn't tell anyone, and then he waited days for his film crew to arrive. So incidents like this do not help the cause of combating climate change because they provide fuel for the denial machine, which we will not be discussing on this episode. But let's just start with a very basic description of climate change before we introduce climate justice.
Yeah, good, because I really don't know much about climate change other than kind of the broad soundbite. But one question that I have right off the bat is climate change the same thing as global warming?
Yes. Climate change describes global warming, which is the average increase in the Earth's global temperature and how that impacts climate. So one of the reasons for the switch in language is due to the fact that, you know, global warming is poorly understood by the public and climate change kind of describes better like the issue. Mm-hmm. The current rise in global average temperature is more rapid than previous changes and is primarily caused by humans burning fossil fuels. So fossil fuel use, deforestation, and some agricultural and industrial practices increase greenhouse gases, notably carbon dioxide and methane.
Mm-hmm.
So where are we with climate change? That's just kind of a brief introduction. We're not going to get into the science because that's not the point of this episode. It's around climate justice. But the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is abbreviated and known as the IPCC,
mm-hmm.
During the climate summit every year, they report progress. The countries have, progressed on reducing emissions. So last year, they reported that only 26 of 193 countries that agreed in 2021 to step up climate actions followed through. So kind of like a name and shame campaign. Mm-hmm. Like you said you were going to do this and like almost no one did.
Well, 26 out of 193, that's not very much.
Right. But the world's top two polluters, ourselves, the U.S. and China, have taken some action, but climate negotiations between us have been frozen for months.
Mm.
So this is bad because without drastic reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, Earth is currently on track to warm by an average of 2.1 to 2.9 degrees Celsius compared with pre-industrial levels by 2100. So
are you saying like by almost 3 degrees Celsius by the year 2100?
Yes, yes. Although sometimes it's not really that important to mention the year and the predictions and projections, because what that allows people to do is kind of like think about kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, I would be long dead by then, so
yeah,
who cares?
Like, we don't care, we'll be dead. So the date, we should not focus on that. It's not as important as what's happening now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is a lot higher than the goal of 1.5 degrees Celsius set by the Paris Agreement in 2015. It crosses the threshold beyond which scientists say the likelihood of catastrophic climate impacts will significantly increase.
Mm-hmm. So the average temperature is warming rapidly, and that sounds bad. On top of the fact that I just hate to be hot and sweaty. So let's do something about global warming, because I do not like to be miserable, hot, sweaty during the hot summer months or even in the winter.
Even though you lived in South Carolina and Virginia your whole life.
Well, yeah, I mean, South Carolina definitely cured me of that. I remember one summer it was like 114 degrees for like 2 weeks.
Oh, my God.
And I was walking on campus to my office and you could just like feel the humidity and the resistance.
Yeah.
Of that in the air. So,
oh yeah.
No, thank you. Global warming.
Well, that's one of the, that's actually
climate change
issues is that there's more of those kind of over 100 degree days.
Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, we're also talking about average global temperatures.
Correct.
Which doesn't mean that when we have a cold day here and there, or when it snows, that is proof that the earth isn't warming.
Right.
And in fact, I am, ticked off at Mother Nature and at climate change, because we didn't get a snow day this year. So no snow this year.
Doesn't
no snow
bother me.
This year. Mm. But we've experienced increased effects of polar vortexes the last winter. We had a polar vortex this winter. And thanks to our ocean trash episode, I now know what a vortex is.
What is a polar vortex?
Well, a vortex, as we said, is a whirlpool. So the polar vortex is a whirlpool of very cold winds that whirlpools around the North Pole. Yeah, nice little chilling sound effects there. And the polar vortex stays around the poles, the North Pole, because of the Earth's rotation and because of differences between the poles and air in the lower latitudes. So warmer weather can actually cause disruptions and let those polar winds blast down south. And this happens naturally so often, but scientists speculate that warmer weather near the poles and melting ice due to increasing temperatures will create polar disruptions more often. So although it sounds counterintuitive, climate change can actually lead to colder weather and harsher winters.
Right. And so that's kind of why we stopped using global warming, even though that's the process, is climate change explains the effects better to people who may not understand. So catastrophic climate changes mean for people more intense flooding, like the historic flooding in my home region of Eastern Kentucky last summer, more wildfires, life-threatening heat waves, and species extinction. also means food and water scarcity. Events like flash droughts, the kind that arrive quickly and can lay waste to crops in a matter of weeks, these are becoming more common and faster to develop around the world, and human-caused climate change is a major reason. Flash flooding will continue to increase as there are more extreme participation, I almost said participation, but precipitation, right?
Yeah.
Precipitation events. Warmer temperatures increase evaporation, putting more moisture into the atmosphere that then gets released as snowfall or rain.
Yeah. Yeah. So I kind of get how average increases in temperatures would cause things like heat waves and droughts and now polar vortexes. But what about like hurricanes and floods?
Yeah, so we have to keep in mind that weather is not climate, which is kind of where people who don't understand the process get confused and they see what's happening outside their window. That's weather. That's not climate, right?
So what is climate then? How is weather and climate
different? Weather can be affected by climate. So what we are concerned about are things like warmer sea surface temperatures. They intensify tropical storm wind speeds, giving them the potential to deliver more damage if they make landfall. So these warmer sea temperatures, again, the process of global warming warms the sea, and these cause wetter hurricanes with 10 to 15% more precipitation from storms projected in the future. Recent storms that we've had, like Hurricane Harvey in 2017, Hurricane Florence in 2018, and Imelda in 2019, like 60 inches of rain, over 35 inches of rain, 44 inches of rain. This demonstrates that devastating floods are triggered by what we call these high rain hurricanes, right?
So like warmer average ocean temperatures
creates
more hurricanes and creates bigger, badder hurricanes.
Yes, we won't get into the whole scientific process since this is a justice podcast. Sea level rise is already making coastal storms more damaging, and that's expected to get worse. Globally, average sea level has risen over half a foot since 1900, and it's expected to rise 1 to 2.5 feet during this century. So coastal regions experience the worst of these effects. It increases the risk of coastal flooding and has intensified the impact of several recent storms. So like all of that in a nutshell, too much on climate change, not enough on justice, right?
Yeah, good point. So what is climate justice?
As we have mentioned before, not all climate impacts are created equal or distributed equally, as we mentioned in the Ocean Justice episode. So the effects of climate change often have disproportionate effects on historically marginalized or underserved communities. So this means it harms them more, right? And the term climate justice recognizes that these populations feel the brunt of these effects. So we discussed this a bit in the Ocean Trash episode with procedural justice concerning having like a fair, inclusive decision-making process for the people who are most affected. And we also introduced the concept of distributive justice, which applies here. So advocates for climate justice are striving to have these inequities addressed, such as whether wealthier nations are the ones who have emitted most of the carbon dioxide that is driving climate change. So should they compensate poorer countries that have not contributed significantly to the problem and are the least prepared for its impacts? So let me give you an example of what this looks like. One study found that investments of the global top 1% were far more important in reducing total emissions than personal consumption, and the pollution gap is larger within countries than between countries.
So when you're talking about the global top 1%, you're talking about rich people there, not rich countries.
Well, no, we're talking about sort of both of that. Like it's a combination of the wealthiest people in the wealthiest nations.
Gotcha.
So this, because this study was kind of looking at, you know, like if the people who are, you know, contributing the most, what about their personal consumption, right, at the individual level? So the bottom 50% of the world population, so the bottom half of the world population emitted 12% of global emissions in 2019, whereas the top 10% emitted 48%, so almost half. So that's just an example of the discrepancy here that we're talking about. Per capita emissions of the global top 1% increased since 1990, while emissions from low and middle income groups within these rich countries actually declined. So yeah, they're the problem. I want to also mention the connection between environmental justice and climate justice, since we briefly introduced the former on the ocean trash episode. Mm-hmm. The main drivers of climate change are carbon dioxide and methane, which are also emitted by coal-fired power plants and incinerators. And if you look at where these toxic facilities are located in the U.S., we see that race, even more than class, is the number one indicator for their placement. Black communities continue to live close to natural gas facilities, and at least 6.7 million Black people in the U.S. live near oil refineries. So they continue to have a higher cancer risk, and the air in many of these communities is already below the national standards for air quality. So this is an example of what we mean, that some countries and communities are affected more than others.
Yeah.
The groups who contribute the least to climate change are the primary victims. And as I said before, this is communities of color, women, indigenous groups, and people of low income. They're all more vulnerable to climate change.
Right, so if we're going to build plants and industries that can pollute the environment and create toxins and poisons for nearby residents, let's put them in poor places and in Black communities.
Right.
It's kind of like the not in my backyard. Put them somewhere else where I don't have to see it and look at it. Particularly in places where residents have little political or social power to do anything about it.
Absolutely, because the people with the power say, not in my backyard. Mm-hmm. They don't want those facilities. And then there are others who have no choice in the matter. Mm-hmm. So we consider the principles of justice and fairness, which ask us to consider the issue of burden sharing. So who has caused the most harm, you know, wealthy nations? Who has benefited the most from the activities that have caused climate change, wealthy nations? And who has the ability to carry most of the burden, wealthy nations?
Yeah. So what can we do?
Good question. There's a lot going on. In this episode, I really didn't get into, you know, the climate movement at all, which in 2019, that really kicked up. The climate movement, you know, has been advocating for reducing emissions, alternative energies, basically everything that you can imagine to deal with the problem. Mm-hmm. But climate change, you know, concerns also need to center climate justice, right? Mm-hmm. So this means that not only do we need to obviously halt the warming process as much as we can, we also need to implement global strategies that invest resources into helping the people most at risk adapt. So just 4 days ago, it was announced that the EPA in the U.S. will invest $177 million to create 17 technical centers that will help environmental justice organizations around the country apply for federal funding. They want to compete for the money in areas like pollution cleanup and workforce development and alternative energies, but they find the federal application process to be daunting and very complex.
Shocking.
Yeah. So anyone who has ever tried to apply for federal funding feels this pain also. So this is to help them apply for that money. So it's money to fund centers that will help them apply for money. And so even though a couple of academic centers receive this funding, some of the organizations that are going to be responsible for doing this are located in the communities that they actually serve. So New Orleans and Harlem, New York. The EPA created the Justice 40 initiative, which mandates that 40% of benefits from federal spending on climate and environment go to historically marginalized communities. Mm-hmm. But the money needs to actually get there, and someone has to be in charge of distributing these benefits. And so that's what these environmental justice orgs are trying to do, but they just can't get the money because you need training and prayers to God to navigate the application process.
Yeah, that can be pretty complicated. So it sounds pretty daunting and complex, but there is an example of the past of when we did kind of rally as a global community, when we tried to fix the hole in the ozone layer.
Ozone.
Yeah. You don't really hear about that much anymore, the hole in the ozone layer, but I remember as a kid hearing a lot about it.
Me too.
But ozone is a gas. I mean, the ozone layer, it sounds like, I think about like this force field around like the Death Star or something like.
But I tend to visualize it as that. Exactly that.
But it's a layer of gas. Ozone is a layer of gas that forms above the earth and protects the earth from a harmful ultraviolet rays from the sun that can lead to increased warming and cancer and skin cancer and those types of things.
Thank you, ozone.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But the problem was chlorofluorocarbons.
Yes.
Or CFCs. But chlorofluorocarbon. That sounds like some kind of treatment that you would get on your teeth as a kid. But yeah, don't do that because it's poisonous.
Don't do that.
Yeah. So CFCs are a greenhouse gas that's like a bazillion more times potent than carbon dioxide and methane in that CFCs deleted the ozone in the atmosphere. And CFCs were particularly used in the 60s, 70s, and 80s in refrigerators and air conditioning and also aerosol cans.
Yes.
So it wasn't just that the poofy hairdos of the 70s and 80s went away. Did you ever have the Aquanet
yes.
big 80s hair?
It was a curl, a tease, and then Aquanet spray.
So those hairdos, those hairstyles went away. Yeah. We stopped using the hairspray so much, and that fixed the hole in the ozone layer. Not.
No, that's
not what happened. No. So the Montreal Protocol was actually a treaty that was signed by every country on Earth to try to eliminate the use of CFCs, and it had a plan where the burden, the expectation, the financial component was higher for wealthier nations, and there was more support for developing countries, and it kind of worked, and CFCs basically totally eliminated from use in refrigerators and air conditioners and Aquanet hairspray. And the whole ozone hole is smaller and shrinking.
Yes, it is.
So it kind of sounds like a similar thing is needed for different kinds of greenhouse gases besides just chlorofluorocarbons.
Right, right. So we need to keep in mind that there are going to be limits on how people can adapt. So even though we need to have like global support for reducing emissions, we need to do better. There is movement, but we can't just expect people to adapt to climate change. The IPCC warned in its 2019 report that, you know, like we have to think about climate migration. These are people who voluntarily move because of the effects of climate change, but there's also going to be massive like internal and cross border displacement as we continue to get like towards this 2 degree mark.
Yeah, like so, from droughts, people can't grow crops or their homes are destroyed by floods and they have to leave.
Yeah, and wildfires. You cannot continue to live in an area that experiences a 100-year flood every year, which is what is predicted. So there are people who are the most vulnerable. They cannot leave otherwise without the push and pressure from climate change. So we have a lot of work. Yeah, we have a lot of work.
Yeah, well, to quote Loki, yes, very sad. Anyway, to close the show, it's our Minute to Spin It, where we each give our 30-second takeaway from the show. So, Tommy, in just a minute, what's your spin?
If humans are going to continue to destroy the planet, then we should just let polar bears eat them.
eaten by polar bears and cocaine bears. Oh, God. Another little Kentucky joke.
Kentucky joke. Mm-hmm. Watch the movie. Maybe. I don't know if it's any good. Ben, what's your spin?
Well, I think that we need to be good stewards of the earth. We need to take care of our planet, and we need to take care of our neighbors near and far all over the world. And that's a good thing to do in and of itself. It's nice to be nice. But if that's insufficient reason or motivation, please, in the name of all that's holy, let's do something to eliminate my SBS, sweaty butt syndrome. No more swamp butt.
No more swamp butt. This podcast is sponsored by the Gandhi Center at JMU. See the show notes for links to articles and studies discussed on the podcast. No one emails us, so please help us decide on what justice topics to cover by sending suggestions via DM on Instagram at Gandhi Center JMU, tweet at us, or tweet us, or DM us on Twitter at just all caps a minute pod. Friends and family, not on IG or Twitter, you can just text us.
Yeah, send us some topics, yo.